You're listening to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for April Baer. Today, Governor Whitmer announced that she was going to ask the federal government for a disaster declaration in response to the COVID-19 outbreak here in our state. Metro Detroit hospitals are quickly hitting capacity for COVID-19 as the city becomes one of the nation's hotspots for the virus. That much anticipated surge we've all been told to prepare for is already here, coming just 2 weeks after Michigan confirmed its first cases. We're going to hear what this looks like for hospitals in the city and what this means for a major city that was already battling the impacts of poverty, racism, and a lack of healthcare access. First, we turn to Michigan Radio's Kate Wells. She has been hearing firsthand stories from healthcare workers on the front lines right now. Kate, welcome to the program.
Hey, Laura.
So what's it been like for these hospitals?
They're just so stunned by how fast this has changed. I think we all are. And where, as you mentioned, this is really hitting are these Metro Detroit hospitals. Places like Beaumont and Henry Ford say they have locations that are hitting capacities. They have limited numbers of supplies, protective gear, ventilators. And I'll talk with healthcare workers there in the ICU or the ER, and they will say that they're doing more intubations and putting more people on ventilators in single days than they ever have in their entire careers. You know, we'll talk with them at the beginning of the week and they'll be like, we're good in terms of N95s, we're actually okay. And then we'll talk to them a few days later and they'll say, one woman told me today that they are being told to report anybody who's wearing an N95 mask outside of specific units in the hospital. So it's changing so rapidly and they're seeing patients changed very rapidly. I've talked with a couple healthcare workers who had patients come into the ER even just a couple days ago with totally unrelated symptoms. And then 2 days later, they see them back in the ER and they're having to be put on ventilators and are being tested for coronavirus. So it's just changing very, very quickly.
Right. So what happens when a hospital reaches capacity? What happens next? Where do the patients go?
So that is what everybody's trying to figure out right now. The state is asking hospitals outside of Southeast Michigan to essentially donate 10% of their beds for these hospitals that are already reaching overflow. And the state and the city are looking for possible overflow spots, you know, places like hotels or universities or conference centers that are not hospitals but could essentially be field sites. Governor Whitmer talked a little bit about that.
The Army Corps has told us it takes 3 to 4 weeks to set up one of these hospitals. We are trying to get it done in, you know, a lot less than that. The urgency is real. The situation is, getting more serious by the day.
So you hear that they are trying to figure out in real time where they can put these patients once these hospitals do really reach their max capacity. One thing, though, that makes that really difficult is that a lot of these patients are critically ill or become critically ill very fast, and it is not easy to transfer those patients once they're in that stage. A hospital administrator I spoke with yesterday called it really their option of last resort.
So we've seen the surge start in the city of Detroit. How about outside of the city? Are we still bracing for a surge outside of the city limits of the city of Detroit?
Yeah, I think the rest of the state is looking at Detroit and holding its breath to a certain extent. Detroit really has been disproportionately hit so far. And even the state will tell you that whether it's in the city or outside of the city, that we don't think we are anywhere near the apex of this surge yet. There are clearly more cases coming. And a lot of this for the rest of the state is going to depend on what individuals do. You know, we talk so much about flattening the curve. Are people going to stay home? Are they going to follow the shelter-in-place orders? That really is the X factor in how many cases start showing up and starting to overwhelm some of these hospitals outside the city.
Kate Wells is a reporter with Michigan Radio. Kate, thanks so much.
Thank you, Laura.
As we just heard, we've seen the COVID-19 surge happen disproportionately in the city of Detroit so far here in Michigan. But we don't have a ton of data to know who's getting sick, why they're getting sick, and who's dying. Here to explain a little bit about the data behind those people who are getting sick with the coronavirus is Sarah Swick, a reporter based out of Detroit for Michigan Radio. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks, Laura.
So what data do we have right now that we know concrete and we can confirm from the state?
So the data that we have right now coming out of the state, well, first of all, just to speak to the numbers in Detroit, according to the latest stats from the Detroit Health Department, there are more than 700 cases just in the city of Detroit alone, and there have been 15 deaths. So we're getting data from the state in terms of the number of cases, where they're located geographically, and also broken down by age and by sex. What we don't know is how many people are being hospitalized, although we get some information piecemeal from some of the hospital systems. And we also don't have data related to race and ethnicity, although that data should be reported by hospitals for all COVID cases through something called the Michigan Disease Surveillance System, but it's not information that's being collected and released by the state at this point.
Why not? And why would that matter?
Well, in terms of why not, the state sort of won't really give an answer to that right now, other than to say that that's just not information that they're pulling. I mean, this is sort of an overwhelming amount of information coming in the first place. So understandably, to some extent, not being prioritized right now. But it would be, some say at least, that it would be good information to have, or at least to have a sense of, just to see who's getting hit hardest. And it's not just necessarily information based on race. We're talking about people with underlying conditions and what those underlying conditions consist of and who exactly is most vulnerable to catching and to having really bad outcomes from this virus. I talked to Jason Stillo. He's a professor and a medical anthropologist at Wayne State University. And he says right now what we're getting are sort of little snapshots of the whole picture, but those are very dependent on how much testing is happening. And it's hard to get a fuller picture.
It makes the job of researchers and folks who are trying to figure out what's going on and make policy to address it really hard. We're flying blind, I think, in a lot of ways.
So what are the most vulnerable subgroups? The city of Detroit being 80 to 85% African-American population and now getting hit that we can see by the numbers geographically, who are the vulnerable subgroups aside from perhaps African-American? Are there other vulnerable people?
Well, Jason Stillo said, first of all, it's important to keep in mind that, well, first of all, we don't have a full picture necessarily of who is being tested and how many cases there are. It's quite possible that Detroit is just a bit about ahead of the curve that we're going to see popping up in other urban centers around the country, and that just because of, you know, densely populated areas are going to have more cases and the spread is going to be quicker. But the groups that we want to know about, other than, you know, by race, would be, you know, people who are homeless, people who use drugs, you know, and people with these sorts of underlying conditions that may make their outcomes worse. So we're sort of layering these biological phenomenon of the virus itself on top of other social phenomenon like housing instability and people who lack access to healthcare and to health insurance and people who are still having to go to work every day in frontline jobs. So that would all be good information for people to have to help shape a public health response here.
It seems like race is so far a pretty important part of this picture of who's getting disproportionately hit. But what's the downside potentially of racializing the data?
I talked to Melissa Creary, and she is a professor at the University of Michigan School of Public Health, and she says that from a health equity perspective, yes, it is super important to collect data around race and ethnicity when it comes to COVID-19, but there's also a downside to that.
Given the history of the United States, it's easy to see how the data around race could lead to more stigmatizing and damaging effects down the line.
So when we think about this phenomenon of COVID-19 sort of layered on top of a history of institutional racism and lack of access to healthcare and other resources in places like Detroit, Kruri's point is that we just have to be sort of really mindful about the ways that we're using this data and using it for to ensure more equitable outcomes rather than, you know, disenfranchising people who are already disenfranchised.
Sarah Swick, Detroit-based reporter for Michigan Radio, thank you so much.
Thank you.